All right, this is Rocky Flats with Greenlight Radio, here a part of the Colorado Community Radio Network. I am on the phone with Zumbi. That is correct, right? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, sir. What's up? How you doing?
Good, good. And this is Zumbi from Zion Eye, for our listeners that don't know, which right away, thank you for doing this interview, first off.
Man, much love, always, man.
So, for those that don't know, tell our listeners, what is Zion Eye? Who is Zumbi? Who is Amp Live? What's your sound? What are you guys all about?
Zion Eye, man, we are traditionally known as an underground hip-hop group. Man, we got our first record in the year 2000, Mind Over Matter. And when it dropped, it came out, I'd say it was a little different, man. We had like a lot of drum and bass beats. And like, we just experimented with different stuff, as well as like classic sample, boom, bap, rap, and all that. So when it came out, people were kind of like, what is this? So eventually, it gained like a lot of critical success, and like people really started to mess with the music. So we've been rocking ever since then, or gonna trailblaze with the sound. I am Zumbi, I'm the MC. Amp Live was the producer. He's not really involved as much now these days, but he wants to focus on his flow, career, social projects, so he's doing that. And I'm still holding down the Zion Eye torch. So that's what it is.
Nice. Okay, so is it just you and then pulling in collaborations and doing that?
Yeah, I've got this dope pianist MC that kept Toys rocking with me, and I also have this dope drummer, Bane the drummer. So it's and we still got the tracks as well, so it's a little different vibe for Zion Eye show, but I feel like it's even more energy on stage right now. A little different. You got to come check it out, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm going to jump back to those questions, actually. I'm curious about the show, but I'm actually going to veer a little bit away from music in general here. We kind of just sort of collaborate all our questions here for our artists. So,
okay.
First off, do you think hip-hop's influence plays a deeper part in society, or music in general, for that matter?
That again? I don't understand the question.
Do you think hip-hop's influence plays a deeper part in society?
In other words, does it... A deeper part in society?
Yeah, like a deeper influence in society other than just music.
I do. I think I honestly think all music does, but I do hip-hop, so I'm particularly sensitive to it. And definitely it influences, like, you know, the people by which the culture is made, which is generally speaking, like, you know, it's pop culture now, in a way.
Yeah.
When hip-hop started, it was culture for poor people, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Disenfranchised people of color, you know, kids, you know, Latinos, blacks, Southeast Asians, poor white kids. That's who was really gravitating towards hip-hop in the beginning. And I feel like, in this day and age, the influence that it has still resonates very strong with them in terms of, like, you know, I live in Oakland, California, where from my viewpoint, my vantage point is like, whatever these cats rap about, somebody's gonna live it. They're living it. It's not just music. They're not just talking about shitty people. Unfortunately, they're actually living this stuff out, man. And it's vice versa. It's like life reflects art, art reflects life. It's both of those things. And I think the power of hip-hop is to change perception and to bend reality in a way that it can help things be more progressive. And that's one thing that I would like hip-hop to stand up and do more of, is to, instead of glorifying the negative aspects of what we see in our lives and our communities, is to kind of take those things, reflect on them, and try to, like, change the energy that we put out. Because these kids, I mean, they're looking up. A lot of these kids are looking up directly to the newest or hottest rapper or whoever's on TV.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Or whoever's on the radio, whoever's in the neighborhood that's getting all the props. That's what the young kids are aspiring to be. And when they're glorifying, you know, misogyny and violence and, like, rampant drug usage and whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I know these things are reality, you dig? But it's not the only reality. And that's the problem with glorifying things. So everything looks like a cartoon, like a ghetto cartoon.
Yeah.
I don't like that. You know what I'm saying? I like the fact that people reflect that this is my harsh reality. is how I've dealt with it. I'm trying to move up, or I'm just dealing with it this way. I can appreciate that. But don't make it into, like, Scarface, the cartoon.
Right.
And it's like, you know, all these little kids are eating this cereal called Scarface, and it's the worst thing in the world for them. But they're eating it up because it's so cool to do.
Yeah.
That's how I feel hip-hop is ingested these days.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that brings me to my next question, actually. You know, in light of all the recent events in relation to police brutality and being that hip-hop has its roots in, well, general political disgruntledness, can you share with our listeners your experience with being black in America today?
For sure. I know a lot of people don't like to hear that it's different to be black in America. But, like, just to share, like, you know, the way I roll now at this point in my life is I know that there's good people and bad people of every skin color. It doesn't really matter. But depending on where you are, like, if I go somewhere where there's mostly white people and there's not black people living there, I get the weird suspicious stares. I get followed through the store. Get eyeballed like you're about to steal something. You can just feel it. Growing up with the energy, you just know. Because you don't feel like that all the time. Sometimes I walk into a place, it's all white people, and it's all love.
Sure.
People are cool, they're courteous, they're kind, you know what I'm saying? And then sometimes I walked into spots like, you know, me and my boys were in, I think we were in Munich, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
We walked into this restaurant, and it was like that scene in Life. I don't know if you've seen the movie Life.
Yeah.
Where they walk into the restaurant, and the record just...
Yeah.
It just scratches off the record and just stops. And the whole restaurant turns around and staring at us like, you know what I mean? And we're like, yo, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Damn, what year is it right now? You know what I'm saying? It felt like you're in 1950s Alabama or something.
Yeah.
And so we just obviously left the spot. But it's those things, you know what I'm saying? And I'm a guy, you know what I mean? I'm a grown man. I have children. I'm a father. I know how to navigate through society, you know what I mean? I'm college educated. My parents raised me in a good way. I have both my parents.
Sure.
I hover around street culture, but I'm not a street dude. I didn't come up in the streets.
Sure.
I'm not going to front and lie and say that. I know a lot of people that are in the street.
Sure.
And we can relate on things, but like I never sold dope. I never packed a gun. That's just not me.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky and blessed to be brought up in a situation where I was tempted to do those things still, even with all the things that I had, going to a private school. You know, like, my school at the time, my high school, is number one rated school in America for football. Like, they made a movie about it called When the Game Stands Tall. That was my high school. That's where I went.
Huh.
And while I'm there, you know, there was racial friction with these kids from the public school behind us, to where, like, me and my boys went to the school. Me, two of us were black. One was Latino, one white dude. We went to the public school behind us to go get his brother or something. The black dude that's with us ends up taking his kid's bike, his white kid's bike, and throws it on the ground. We're like, why'd you do that, man? That's so stupid. Why? What are you doing?
Right.
Next thing I know, there's 50 kids. This is like, you know, this is back in the day, so
yeah,
we call them lockers. These kids were like jean jackets and tight black jeans and stuff like that. There's 50 kids chasing our car around the corner. We smash out. We hit the street. They're still chasing. There's fools are on bikes and on motorcycles and cars. There's a monster. There's not a big high four-wheel truck chasing us. For some reason, this dude who's driving pulls into the parking lot, and then we're like, "Yo, you're stuck. We can't get out this way. Back up." He tries to back up. The transmission falls out the bottom of the car, so we're stuck. All these kids jump out of the car. The kids chasing us. They smash the window. They're locking the car. Somehow, by the grace of God, we didn't get beat to a bloody pulp. The dudes were opening the door, calling us niggas, and this and that, and the third. And there was a bat underneath the seat. I was sitting in the back with my boy Deuce. And I was like, yo, man, if I'm going to get beat up, I'm not going to get beat up without fighting back. You know what I'm saying? Like, my dad told me to fight back. I'm not going to just sit there and let you just crush me.
Yeah.
So they're opening the car doors. And then finally, I just like, man, forget it. I'm getting out. And I took the bat. I jumped out. And I started swinging the bat. And everybody just backed up. And then my boy Deuce got out. And I was like, who wants to get cracked in the head? I was just going crazy. I was like, 16-17-year-old tripping.
Right.
And then for some reason everybody backed up. Nobody wanted to be hit with the bat. Thank God there was a bat in the car. And then one of our friends, who was like the local thug guy, a black dude, came up and like socked somebody. And then somebody said, cops, and everybody ran. And like, luckily, after that event, it was like I was thinking about buying a gun to protect myself because I felt like threatened.
Sure.
Because it was like these kids were like gathering at the school and doing all this. But, you know, it was really, I think really it was more so in my mind. If I hadn't been kicking it with the knucklehead to pick up the guy's bike in the first place, I could have avoided it.
Yeah.
But this is the type of thing, like, in black America, I mean, in America with black people, is that you're very close to the edge. If you make a mistake,
yeah.
I feel like you're penalized more severely
Absolutely.
Than maybe a white person.
Absolutely.
Or maybe you're expected to slip instead of just like, oh, you know. They did a study online I read about a couple months ago. It was on Yahoo. And they were talking about how they did a study where psychologists basically showed two pictures, a picture of a black male and a white male, same age, like 4 or 5 years old. And they asked regular people, how old do you think these kids are? And basically what the study found is that people in America, when they see a black child, they usually judge them to be 5 to 6 years older than they actually are. And when they look at the picture of the white child, they judge the child to be the exact age that they are. Meaning that they look at black youth as if there's no innocence, as if
sure.
they've been
sure.
through so much.
Right.
They're already exposed to this harsh reality of life.
Right.
And the reality of the true reality is that we're all human beings, man. We all shit. We all have blood. We all feel pain. Mm-hmm. We all want to be loved. We all have to eat food to survive. We all have to breathe air. It's no difference. It's all about the situation and what you receive in life. You know what I'm saying? If your parents are there to comfort you and take care of you, you're going to be more secure in life than if they're not.
Yeah.
If they're on drugs. I'm sure like a white kid whose parents were on drugs and addicted to drugs has a very similar feeling of life as a black kid whose parents are addicted to drugs. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, I mean, this is kind of what it... But I'm not getting too deep because, you know,
yeah,
I don't have time. It's a whole thesis.
There's a whole series going on right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, well, that's a great answer, honestly. I mean, and a great story. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, so shifting gears a little bit to a different topic. As an artist, how do you feel about people stealing music from the internet?
Like to record on, like taking instrumentals and stuff?
No, I mean like straight up, like you make an album, it goes out, and all your listeners, your fans, just take it off of a torrent site or something like that.
So, I mean, you know what, man? I it's one of those things that, like, can't really be mad at it because it's a reality.
Sure.
It's something I've just had to accept. Like, I'm not Metallica. Like, I haven't sold tens of millions of records where I can be like, I'm not making as much money anymore. You better pay me.
Right.
Like, I can't do that. I've never been in that position.
Sure.
So I'm happy when I come to town and people show up and they know the words and they vibe and they have a good time and they buy a t-shirt. Like, that's cool to me.
So you think it like, maybe helps the overall fan base become more intimate with the music? Or do you think it's, at least for your artistry?
I do at this point. I mean, in fact, like the last 2 years, we've just been releasing free music. We haven't even sold an album like in a while. Just because I was just like, man, let's just give away some music because I feel like we were kind of that slipping behind in a way to where we were loading up on this big project once a year, usually at the end of the year,
sure.
to sell to people. And then between that, we weren't doing anything. So it's like one big push of like, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, and then we disappeared for the rest of the year. And I was like, yeah, I see what the kids are doing. They're like just releasing music, man. They're like making a song that's out that night.
Yeah.
You know, they make it 3 or 4 songs and it's out, and then a week later they make another song. And I was like, they're just creating and releasing it. You don't have to go through a label anymore. I'm kind of from like an era where you make an album and then you sit up for 2 years, you tour,
yeah.
and then you come out with another album 2 to 3 years later. You know what I mean? And
sure.
that's not really doable these days. So I'm not really mad at the file sharing and all that. It's good that I want people to support the artists that they feel. And I know that free music is a way that people get to get to know who the artist is. So
sure.
it is what it is, man. Just that if you're feeling it, support in some way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back to your show, what can we expect from your show? What are we expecting from this live event?
It's a really cool tour, and I'm really happy with all the groups on the tour. To start off, we have the homie Jay Lately, who's our tour manager / opening act. He's doing a great job. He's kind of like laid-back, fun rapper. After him, Kev Choice gets on. He's like a classically trained pianist.
Nice.
Who MCs. He's more like a conscious type of MC. Very thoughtful lyricism. And just like beautiful melodies, because he plays piano and raps at the same time. So it's like a very different take on hip-hop.
Yeah.
Then we went to The Rocksmith, who to me is one of the best MCs on the West Coast. Like, bar none. Super lyrical. A lot of people know him for the battle rap circuit. He's on MTV battling, and he was big in like Grind Time and King of the Dot and all that stuff.
Nice.
He kind of like let the battle scene go, and he focused on writing, and his writing is just super sick.
Nice.
So I'm just he's really raw MC. And then we go to Los Rocas, who are two young Panamanian cats who live in Oakland. So they spit like a lot of Spanish, but like it's straight party time when they hit the stage, like just straight antics, party. The ladies just seem to love it. It's just like a dance thing. They can spit. It's kind of nice. Like I'll say like more of a dance hall / reggae feel.
Sure.
Yeah, and then we get on stage, I, and it's myself, Cat Choice again, and Dame the drummer. And we just hit with, you know, it's uplifting soul music that's hip-hop, you know? That's how I categorize it. Yeah.
Absolutely. That sounds good. That sounds awesome. How's the tour been going so far?
It's been awesome, man. Well attended. It's been like, I think one or two shows where I was like, kind of lame, but like we've done like, I think 13 or 14 so far. So everything's been packed houses. A couple of them have sold out. So it feels really good, man. We're having a good time and the crowds are really dope. So hope to continue in Colorado, Fort Collins.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I did check out your latest EP, the Sun, Moon, and Stars EP.
Yeah.
Is that the latest release that you have right now?
Yes.
Nice. I'm definitely digging it. I've actually still have 5 minutes left to listen to.
Oh, nice. Right on.
That's another question actually approaching to you. Out of all of your work, is there anything that you find particularly more, maybe not better or anything like that, but more intimate or something more close to you?
I think really, man, the first album, Mind Over Matter, because in creating that album, it was just like, it was, first of all, it was like a dream to even make an album, to be a musician. It was like, I was still actively dreaming it. I didn't know if it was going to happen or not. And I was just completely focused on trying to make it happen. So it was basically like writing raps, working out and meditating, and that's all I really did. So it was like supreme focus in my life at that point.
Right.
When I listen back to those songs, I can really hear it. Like I can hear the intention and the hunger and the desire to have something more and have my life have some kind of meaning.
Yeah.
When I go back and listen, it's like, yeah, man, like it still inspires me to hear what I'm rhyming about back then, because I was like, wow, I was so focused. Nowadays, I have a family. I have other responsibilities. I got to go to soccer practice. I got to go to swim class. I got to, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, like, the intention is still there. But, like, when I listened back to that, it was like I didn't have anything else to do but that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it was just a good moment.
Nice. That's a good way to put it. All right. I think that's actually all the questions I have for you. I wanted to thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Yes, sir.